Hello, this is Pennsylvania State Senator Gene Yaw of the 23rd Senate District, and I want to welcome you to this special telephone town hall meeting on heroin and opioid addiction. We are calling you live from the State Capitol building in Harrisburg to discuss this very important subject, something that has touched each and every one of us, whether personally, professionally, or from an economic perspective. This is the first in a series of telephone town halls that your legislators will be having in order to bring the issue of heroin and opioid addiction to you. To ask a question at any time during this call, be sure to press *3 on your phone. These telephone town halls are extremely important because they offer you and your elected officials a direct line of communication. Tonight, we have assembled a panel of experts who are joining me in the studio to discuss this growing epidemic. As I said, tonight's telephone town hall is unique in that it will focus on one key subject area, heroin and opioid addiction in the Northeast region of Pennsylvania. Tonight's telephone town hall is being sponsored by your area state senators that include Senator Dave Argel, Senator Lisa Baker, Senator John Gordner, and Senator Mario Scavello. This town hall will allow you to listen in, offer your opinions, and even ask questions from your home. Once again, to ask a question at any time during this call, be sure to press *3 on your phone. Recent reports indicate that approximately 80% of heroin addicts trace their addiction back to prescription opioids. Further, a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Vital Signs report confirmed that healthcare providers wrote 259 million prescriptions for painkillers in 2012. That's enough for every adult in the United States to have a bottle of prescription painkillers. Since 2014, the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, a legislative research agency of the General Assembly, of which I serve as chairman, has conducted 11 public hearings on the heroin epidemic, which has now taken center stage on local, state, and national levels. Before we meet our panel of experts joining me in the studio, I'd like to introduce our sponsors of tonight's Telephone Town Hall event who represent you across northeastern Pennsylvania. First, I'd like to welcome Senator Dave Argel. Dave?
Thanks, Gene, and thanks for your work on this and for hosting this special Teletown Hall. You know, to prepare for tonight, I spoke to my county coroners in the district that I represent in Schuylkill County and Berks County. I know because of your work, Gene, you know, you've been proving to us that there's an escalating number of heroin and opioid users, not only in Pennsylvania, but all across the country. But I wanted to see what was happening in my own district. In Schuylkill County, just a couple of years ago, we were at 4 heroin deaths, then it increased to 7, then it increased to 9. Berks County, of course, is much larger. There, it started at 11, went to 26, went to 27. We're unfortunately set to break the record this year. And in talking to them about the broader subject of drug overdoses in general, in Schuylkill County, we're up to 44. And I realize those may just sound like numbers, but they're not. A couple of months ago, I met with a woman that I've known for a long, long time, the mother of a very talented young man who really recently lost his life to this terrible problem in my district. And it's just an awful thing. That's why I guess we're doing this tonight. We have to do a better job of educating people and combating this issue. And so, again, Gene, thanks for allowing me to take part with this.
Well, you're welcome, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the whole purpose of doing this is to help raise the awareness of the problem and get more and more people, the general public, involved across the board. And I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your work. And we hope that, you know, everybody learns a little bit of something to help us in this epidemic throughout the night. We also have with us tonight Senator Mario Scavello, who represents Monroe and Northampton counties. Mario?
Thank you, Gene. Thank you so much for doing this. my county, you know, number one, Monroe and Northampton County has been hit very, very hard. And as I look at the numbers and start to realize this is an epidemic nationwide, if we continue to go at the rate we're going, and I believe we are, unfortunately, we'll have more deaths to overdose this year for drugs than we had in 12 years of the Vietnam War. Just think of that, 12 years of the Vietnam War. And for doing this, just to get people to understand, ask the questions. If there's anything that we can do for you, my constituents, please call in, ask your question. Don't be embarrassed. You know, this is a disease. This addiction is a disease that we have to handle like a disease, and we're out there to help you. We want to help you. We want to answer your questions. So please give us that opportunity tonight. And if you can't, don't want to ask it tonight, if you want to come and see my office, I'm glad. Anything we can do, we will do to try to help you and your family.
Well, I thank you for your comments, and I agree with your statement about the Vietnam War. And I yesterday I had a hearing at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and one of the questions I asked is, I don't understand why people aren't marching in the streets and doing all the things that they did in protest of the Vietnam War when we're losing almost that many people every year. So,
imagine that. Yeah.
With that, thank you, Mary. I appreciate your sponsoring this event tonight. I'd also like to recognize Senator Lisa Baker, who represents Luzerne, Pike, Wayne, Wyoming, and we represent together Susquehanna County.
Thank you, Senator Yaw, for facilitating this first-of-its-kind regional discussion that is bringing into our homes of our constituents, our neighbors, our friends, a crisis that we know has been reaching into every part of our state. So I want to thank you for doing that. So many of the communities in the 20th District have really been active in working to shine the light on this problem. They've also been working to find solutions, and what I've been seeing through district attorneys and community groups and heroin prevention task forces, they've really been trying to offer support, letting people know what's out there, but we know more needs to be done, and so holding these community forums and these special meetings is certainly so important. So I'm so glad that many residents of the 20th District can join us for this call, can tell us what they're seeing, tell us their stories. We know through open dialogue, we can hear what's working. We want people to tell us where the gaps are. So we look forward to hearing the input to help us shape, because the intent is, what can we do to shape future policy and set funding priorities? So please call in. We look forward to hearing your questions, your concerns, and we look forward to working together in a bipartisan way to tackle this problem. And Gene, thanks so much for bringing us all together in a regional forum that is the first step in us providing solutions and working together.
Thank you, Senator Baker. We appreciate your help and your support. We also have with us tonight Senator John Gordner, who represents Columbia, Luzerne, Montour, Northumberland, and Snyder County. Senator Gordner.
Gene, glad to be a part of the event tonight. We also are faced with the same issues in the 27th Senatorial District. Back in May, we had a couple of events in my district, one that was sponsored by Representative Culver, Representative Mosser, and I. We ended up having about 150 people in a school auditorium with Gary Tennis, our Secretary of Drug and Alcohol, and Deb Beck, and some other local folks, which is very educational. And then that same month, we had the governor's roundtable, which he's been doing around the state at Penn State Hazleton, which again was an educational experience for those of us that participated and myself. I'll just finish with, as we all will say, it hits home with so many of us. Just talking to a family friend on Monday, and their 17-year-old son is in a rehab facility. Hopefully he's still there as of today. Found out the 17-year-olds can find themselves out of rehab facilities, but it just started in July with marijuana, moved on from marijuana to legally obtain prescription drugs such as Xanax and an opioid to counter-effect the feelings from the marijuana. And he's just a completely different kid. Ended up with troubles with the law last week and some bad episodes with hitting and striking his mom and dad. And they got him into a rehab center on Sunday. And he's rebelled a bit. He's calmed down a bit. But with each day, they're hoping that he stays there and that the folks there can address his issue because, as you and your panel will say, he's on the stepping stones to the wrong path. So it's just another example of the situations out there, and we're hopeful that events like tonight can help to address the situation.
Thank you, Senator Gortner, and we appreciate your support and everything that we're doing. Remember to ask a question tonight, *3 on your phone. And I want to personally thank the senators, Senator Argall, Senator Scavella, Senator Baker, and Senator Gortner for sponsoring this event tonight. With me in the studio to discuss the subject of heroin and opioid addiction are special guests for tonight. First is Barry Denk. He's the director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, and Barry has been with me for all 11 hearings that we've had throughout the state on the opioid and heroin problem over the last 2.5 years. We're also privileged to have Shane Scanlon, the district attorney in Lackawanna County, and I think that Shane also was a participant in one of the hearings that I had earlier on, so he is very, very versed in the problems that we have. And the other is Andy Sullivan, who's a former president and CEO of Mazzetti and Sullivan Counseling Services, but I believe he said that you've been involved in this for more than 40 years. So, you know, this is the type of thing that we need experience in. First of all, I'd like to welcome all the participants tonight here in the studio, and I'd like to kick off some of the questions here by saying, I just throw this out to everybody. We hear this all the time that we cannot arrest our way out of the problem, and I guess I'd start off and ask for comments from District Attorney Scanlon. What's meant by that, and what does that mean with this crisis?
Thank you, Senator. I think what it shows is a sign of our times. You know, historically we were locking people up, and that was our answer to the drug problem. If we were to continue doing that now at the rate of people that are using and the amount of heroin that we have present in our communities, we would very quickly, number one, run out of jail space. And secondly, you know, upon release, if we're not treating the problem, the addiction problem that underlies all of our criminal issues, we're going to let these people out and just count the days until we're putting them back in to one of our local jails or a state prison. So I think in a nutshell, that's what everyone is saying when they say we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem.
I've been impressed. I mean, we've heard that repeatedly from virtually every police officer that has testified in or made presentations at our hearings, and it's a bigger problem than it faces across the board. Barry?
I remember at one of our hearings, a county prison warden said that he estimated that about 80% of their inmates had some substance abuse issue that they had to deal with. So in addition to the cost of incarceration, they still need to arrange some type of treatment services for them. And so you get that double cost. And so we're hearing that the drug court system that some counties have in operation is a phenomenal way to divert people out of incarceration, but with some very severe conditions for that that lead them into the treatment arena.
Andy, what's your thought about that question?
Really successful aspect of treatment courts is that they engage the individual in the program with some consequences, but for a length of time that gives the individual an opportunity to recover. The aspect of substance use disorders, and especially severe substance use disorder, is it changes the brain chemistry. And what we know now is it takes a significant amount of time for that to come back to a stable set. So with the parameters, you're seeing much more success with the drug court time. And the more we engage them in treatment, in a treatment modality, if we keep them 12 to 18 months, we see a higher success rate.
Andy, I'm going to ask you a question. This came in on one of the online messages, and that is, how do I know if someone is using?
Well, I think what you'll see with an individual is a change in their personality. Generally, you'll see somebody who's gone from being an engaged individual in the family to being disengaged, to starting to be isolating, because one of the aspects of addiction that is almost always there is isolation starts to come into play. If their friends change, if their dress changes, if they're doing things late at night that you have no idea where they are. So when you see those changes, that's a red flag. That's a time to address the issue directly and speak with your family member. And I'll tell you right off the bat, if they're engaged in an active addiction, they may be somewhat resistant.
All right, thank you. I'd like to also remind everybody that I want to thank our sponsors this evening. They are Senator Dave Argall, Senator Lisa Baker, Senator John Gordner, and Senator Mario Scavello for sponsoring this telephone town hall. We have a question from Jerry in Luzerne County. Jerry, what's your question?
The question is pretty simple. I'm just wondering why for so many years natural medicine treating pain has been politically boycotted through the whole country. I'm past president of the Pennsylvania Naturopathic Association, and we're still fighting for licensure to incorporate drug-free therapy for pain. And the issue with the pain is that it's at the emergency room where it starts. I mean, we need to change our whole attitude about treating pain. And as a 16-year-old athlete, when I was in a car accident, I was pronounced dead at the scene of the accident, and I came through a coma. And it was a nurse at the Mercy Hospital in Wilkes-Barre, and back then nurses were trained in massage therapy. And her orthopedic approach in massage therapy actually saved my life after surgery by a brilliant surgeon, Dr. Sternley. But it was then that I decided that I wanted to become a physician and specialize in natural medicine and drug-free medicine. And it's always been a great therapy, but it's never been politically allowed, and especially in Pennsylvania. We can't even get a naturopathic license here to do drug-free therapy. We're still working on that.
Thank you for your question. I'll try and answer a part of it. I think that we do have some legislation that's hopefully going to control the prescription of opioids from emergency rooms. But I think that the general answer from my perspective of your point, though, is that at this point, we're going to take a look at every treatment modality out there. And everything is on the table at this point. And so some of the things that you spoke about very well may be re-examined again, and I expect that they will. Andy, do you have a comment about
yes,
that?
I think that you're absolutely right. One of the things that we're seeing in the treatment field, and it's been moving this way for quite a while, is bringing in alternative therapies like Tai Chi and transcendental meditation and massage and acupuncture and being able to incorporate those into the treatment setting. There's probably a lot of reasons why on the other side of the medical side, the pharmaceutical side, on a political basis, I won't comment on that, but this epidemic is pushing us to learn more and more about using alternative medicines.
Yeah, and if I may, I was at a hearing up in Scranton, and there were some physicians there from the Geisinger Health System, an orthopedic surgeon, in fact, who said that he is really taking a look at those alternative methods of treating pain for his surgical patients, such as yoga and other types of issues. So I think while it may be a little bit late in happening, I do think that we're seeing these alternative means being looked at more seriously and being considered and recommended.
Jerry, this is Shane Scanlon. I recently met with one of our local ER doctors, and he actually touted the incredible success of the alternate therapies. But I think one of the big issues that our citizens are going to face is I don't think insurance companies are ready to pay for or to fund those alternative types of therapies. So you know, it's something that we're going to have to grow into. As the senator said, I think we have to be open to looking at all types of different avenues as a way to get away from opioid pain medications, and I think that was a great question.
Right, and if I may, one last thing. In terms of us as patients, there's not many of us who have a very long or strong thresholds for pain. If we suffer from pain, we want relief, and we want it fairly quick, and I think that whole paradigm needs to shift from a patient standpoint as well.
We have Erica on the line from Pike County. Erica, what's your question?
Yes, hi. I was just wondering, as a parent of an ex-heroin addict, I had a very hard time finding him a treatment facility, and he was willing to go through our insurance. Now, I know there are many children out there that don't have insurance, and I was wondering when maybe some free rehabs are going to be available for patients that are looking for help?
Thank you for your question. You know, we could all answer that, and I can give you the short answer. I think that we've just awakened to the magnitude of the heroin problem over the last couple of years, and I think that you're going to see a kind of a revision of our treatment systems and everything else, where we spend money, how we spend it, how we organize all the treatment facilities, and law enforcement, everybody is going to be involved in this. But I think that we're faced with what the Physician General in Pennsylvania said is an epidemic. I know the Physician General of the United States said this is a national epidemic, and I think that we're just getting our feet wet as to how we're going to start to deal with it.
Also, all 67 counties are served by what's called a single county authority. Some counties are what they call joiners. But those agencies get funding from the Pennsylvania Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, and they do have funds that can support individuals who meet some type of financial criteria with financial help to cover treatment for them. And when Pennsylvania went into their Medicaid expansion program a couple years ago, that did free up and bring in some additional federal funds to support treatment for those who have some financial challenges and don't have private insurance companies. So there is that network of single county authorities, and that would be a first point of contact for those individuals seeking some type of financial support for treatment.
So that would be your local county drug and alcohol commission or
yes.
department.
We have Roseanne on the line from Northumberland County. Roseanne, what's your question?
My question is, I have teenagers, and they are very aware of lots of people in their age group that have done drugs or know people who are selling drugs. And my question is, why is there not like a toll-free hotline number provided that is very advertised to teens in schools that they can report anonymous drug dealers without having to have their names released as, a lot of kids are afraid to report because they're afraid they're going to be found out.
Thank you for your question. That's a great question. It's also a great question for the district attorney that we have here.
Roseanne, I appreciate your question, and I appreciate the concern of both you and your children. What you have to do is reach out to your local law enforcement agencies, maybe your DA's office or your local police departments. In our area, I know that our office has an anonymous tip line at our DA's office, as well as the Scranton City Police Department. They have an anonymous tip line that works both by phone and over the internet. So reach out, see if your town has one of those anonymous tip lines. If they don't, maybe you want to reach out to one of your neighboring communities, place your anonymous tip through their system, they'll forward it to your authorities.
All right, thank you. We have Keith on the line from Luzerne County. Keith, what's your question?
Yes, I'd like to know how you're gonna handle chronic pain patients that need opioids to survive. And they probably run dead because they're in so much pain because, like, something like MS or neuropathy or something.
All right. Thank you for your question. From my perspective and the work that we've done, we don't intend to, have a limit the drugs that people that really need them or their availability or their ability to get necessary pain medication. What we're looking at is the type of thing that where a person has knee surgery and they get 60 Percocet or Vicodin or something like that when they need one or two or five. So that's kind of the what we're looking at to limit, not those chronic illnesses or near-death cancer patients or anything like that. Anybody else want to comment on that?
The only thing, I was watching a CNN town hall meeting on this not too long ago, and one of the participants asked the same question. She was 60 years old, and I thought the answer was, you know, she had chronic pain, and she was wondering about the reaction. Most physicians that I come in contact with are very careful about prescribing, especially when they're working with chronic pain patients. Most chronic pain patients don't abuse their pain medication. So I believe that we, although we may see somewhat of a rebound effect or a spike, most docs who are working with chronic pain patients and don't see abuse will not cut their patients off.
All right. Thank you for your question. We have Patrice on the line from Schuylkill County. Patrice, what's your question?
Hello, Senators. My question is this. My family, which includes my husband, my son, and myself, are all first responders for a volunteer fire company here in Schuylkill County. We have been called three times to the same address for a call came in for cardiac arrest. The person was actually had overdosed, and the ALSS, Advanced Life Support System, administered the Narcan. That's three times in 2 weeks. Now, my question is this. Suppose we get a call to an actual cardiac arrest and that same address at the same time. Our hands are tied. We're a volunteer fire company. So now we know we're going to another overdose. Now this guy sits up, the Narcan's administered, he sits up, he's fine, refuses the ambulance, the police let him go, and it's just a vicious cycle. So now he knows, I could overdose, I'm not going to jail, I'm not going to die because they're going to come and save me. But in the meantime, we have an actual person who perhaps fell over cutting his grass as children and has no drug background. And he has to suffer because we have to go give this guy Narcan again and bring him back around.
Thank you for your question. And it is how many times you have to go back. And I, you know, I understand. We appreciate the dilemma. But I guess the only thing I would say is that what would you do if you had two heart attack patients at the same time in under any circumstances? There's no question about it. There are probably abuses of Narcan or Naloxone out there. But the one thing that we look at is that in order to treat somebody, the first thing is they have to be alive. We're also looking at some things that if Naloxone is administered, we need some follow-up. There's no question. That's a hole in the system. But as I said earlier, we're working, this is something new for Pennsylvania, something new for the United States to have an epidemic like this. So we're looking at things like that. What can we do if Narcan is administered to require that people undergo some type of treatment or they're reported to a treatment facility? So we're aware of your problem. We understand it. We have Charles on the line from Northumberland County. Charles, what's your question?
My son died 10 years ago from a heroin overdose, and I informed our local police department in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, of the act and who was selling it, and they didn't do anything about it. I know you have some district attorneys there that can answer my question. Why aren't we taking care of this when the parent tells the district attorney where it's coming from, and they're not doing anything about it? That's all I have to ask.
All right, thank you. And I will ask District Attorney Scanlon to address that.
Charles, I'm very sorry for your loss. I can't imagine the pain of losing a son. I can tell you that just maybe an hour or two ago, a pre-meeting before we started this town hall meeting, we discussed that very issue. The drug delivery resulting in death is a tough statute for prosecutors to prove. The fact that you know where those drugs came from doesn't always mean that we can prove where they came from or how they were administered to the person that passed away. It is a problem that we're aware of. It's a problem that we have brought to the attention of our legislatures. You know, please don't give up hope. If a family learns of a tragedy like that, please bring it to the authorities. I promise you, Charles, it's not that we don't want to prosecute the drug dealers that are taking lives. We're actively out there looking for cases that we can prove to teach drug dealers a lesson and to let them know that we are willing to come after them.
Thank you. Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for this event this evening and bringing this telephone town hall to existence concerning the opioid heroin problem in our district and especially in northeastern Pennsylvania. Those are Senator Dave Argall, Senator Lisa Baker, Senator John Gordner, and Senator Mario Scavello. We have Paul on the line from Luzerne County. Paul, what's your question?
Good evening, everybody. I am a former board president of Sorrento Gardens and Pathway to Recovery in Hazleton and a current board member. My question is, I'm working, Shane, with your next-door neighbor, Bob Klein, up at Susquehanna County.
Great
the
guy.
Good. I just met him a few weeks ago, and we're working well together. And his drug take-back van that he has up there, I'm trying to get that down here in Luzerne County to get more than one set up in Luzerne County. We're working together with Rotary Club and with Stephanie Salavantis and our police chief. We're all in conversation. Tara Tuhill's involved. My question is the thing we keep running into, we can get the van. We can get it paid for. We can get operating and insurance costs. You need to have two, which Bob told me about. I thought one was the answer. You need to have two law enforcement people when this van goes to any event in the vehicle at all times and for obvious reasons. The question I have is it's all going back to funding overtime for police officers. We've been banging our heads with this and everything else we can get it. We can make it happen. But without the guys or gals to drive it, the law enforcement to operate the vehicle, it won't go anywhere. And as I'm sure you guys all know, the value of the vehicle is instead of taking your unused drugs, legal or illegal, because it doesn't matter, to City Hall or to the courthouse or wherever they have the containers, we're going to bring that to you. We're going to be at the football game, and we're going to be at the parade, and we're going to be at whatever events are in the county. So you're going to the event, you put the bag in your pocket, and you throw it in the bin, and that's the end of it. You get rid of them, get them off the street. It all goes back to who's going to pay the policeman. That's my question. Who's going to pay the policeman, and can you guys on the state level appropriate funds for this?
Thank you for your question.
Paul, I appreciate your efforts. Good luck with Bob Klein. Great guy. So is Stephanie Salavantis. I will say Rotary has been a phenomenal ally in this fight. They've made some offers in our county to help us with things, and we can't thank them enough. The funding issue is a big issue, Paul, with truly everything we do. In our county, we don't have a van like Bob does, but we do mobile take-backs, and we try to schedule them maybe at senior high-rises and really advertise the heck out of them, because we've learned that if we don't really push the advertising, it really doesn't make it worth our while. One thing that I would mention is we're learning of pharmacies that are attempting to set up take-backs in the pharmacies that don't require us to put law enforcement there, and we know how available and prevalent our pharmacies are, so if that takes off, that would be a great ally. Another thing you could try to do is reach out to your single authority, your drug office, and see if they'd be able to help with any type of funding for your police officers to do the mobile take-backs. But it's great work, and thank you, Paul.
Yeah, Paul, I will also say that one of the representatives and myself just recently had a senior expo, And we had made arrangements to have a mobile drug box there, and it didn't show up, or there was some confusion, miscommunication. So we decided that we were going to have our own drug box until the sheriff arrived, and we got an old milk carton and put it out on a table, and by the end of the expo, the milk carton was full. Now, the sheriff did come and take the box, but I think you're absolutely right, and I think over a period of time, though, that people will get more and more attuned, and there will be funds available and different programs that are going to help in this regard. So there's no question about it that it's important to get these drugs off the street. We have Linda on the phone from Monroe County. Linda, what's your question?
Thank you, everybody, for being there. My question to you all has there been any kind of, has anybody entertained an idea of educating young children at a young age, say maybe at the third grade level, to the dangers of what's going on and the dangers of drugs and addiction? I know I was educated in high school at ninth grade back, I'm not going to say how when, like back in the 70s, in the early 70s and 69 about it. But I feel that there's a lot of young children now that are starting to experiment and be curious. And there's demons out there that are tempting these kids. And if there's a way to teach the children at a young age so that they don't fall into the trap of predators on trying to get them interested. I mean, is there anything going towards education at a young level in the school systems?
All right. Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask Barry Denk from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, who has been involved in all 11 hearings that we've had, to comment on that.
Yes, in fact, we're hearing that there is increasing effort in educational and prevention programs at those early ages. One of the challenges is to ensure as best as possible that it's an evidence-based program. We had somebody testify from Penn State University who is very much involved in research looking at evidence-based outcomes. And funding sources that do support education are very concerned that it's evidence-based types of prevention programs. So we are seeing grassroots efforts and formal efforts within school districts to do that. So I think yes, in short answer to your question. And we heard this just yesterday at Indiana University of Pennsylvania at our hearing, and it's a tragic anecdote about the severity of this situation. We heard from somebody who said in a preschool program, it was show and tell, and a young five-year-old girl, for her show and tell, took a shoestring and wrapped it around her arm to demonstrate how her mother shoots up on heroin. We were spellbound by that comment, but in fact it happened. And so I think it brings home the reality that we must start at very early ages to educate our children about this epidemic.
Thank you. We have a question that came in online from Patrice. It's, what is a board-certified addiction medicine doctor, and how do I find one? Andy, maybe you can address that.
A doctor would have to go through the ASAM, which is the American Society of Addictive Medicine criteria, take the test, that they have suitably completed all coursework for ASAM credentialing. And you can find a list of ASAM credentialed physicians at the ASAM website. And just if you type in ASAM into the internet, it'll take you to that website, American Society of Addiction Medicine, and you should get a list of ASAM docs in your area.
All right. Thank you. We have Joan on the line from Wayne County. Joan, what's your question?
Greetings. It's nice to be here with you. What I'm asking is, and you started to cover it a little bit, but is anything being done about writing short prescriptions for 3 and 4 day supplies so that there's not the opiates lying around the house, you know, easy pickings for other people that want to take them for other reasons? And it, can it be addressed at the doctor's offices, at prescribing, the emergency room, and or the pharmacy?
Joan, thank you for your question. And the answer is a real quick yes. There's several bills in the legislature, with some of which may likely be passed before the end of this year, that would place restrictions on the number of opioids or that type of prescription that can be written, the number of days. So I think we are addressing your exact question. And like I said at the beginning, this is it's new territory for everybody involved, but we recognize that that is an issue. We have Lori on the phone from Luzerne County. Lori, what's your question?
Good evening. Thank you to participate in this town hall meeting. I am a business owner, and I would like to know how I should respond to finding used hypodermic needles near my business.
All right, thank you. I'm going to ask District Attorney Scanlon to address that.
Lori, I'd handle them carefully. I think that'll be the first word that I'll offer to you. One suggestion would be to contact your local police department and see if they'd come out and take them up. I know they have Sharps containers that they can safely dispose of them in. Really, that's going to be my public response to you, Lori. Please just be careful and contact your local police.
Thank you. We have Mary on the line from Pike County. Mary, what's your question?
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to know if there's any kind of support, or if there can, through legislature or Senator Baker, to help the grandparents and the families and the children that are left behind from all of this, because there are so many, including myself. I've been taking care of grandchildren, 2 sets, for the past 10 years on and off. I thank you.
Thank you. I will say that's a question. I'm going to pass that around to everybody, but we heard about that yesterday at our hearing in Indiana. About a grandmother who was taking care of 4 children below the age of 10. And that is something I don't think that anybody anticipated, but that now is becoming more and more of a problem. Barry, or anybody want to talk about that?
I would say that check with your single county authority, your drug and alcohol programs, and with your treatment programs in the area, and see if they have support groups. One of the things that we did within our system is put free support groups in for family members, because it's such a, I don't even call it a ripple effect. This is like a tsunami effect. It covers generations of families, and it affects generations going forward. We in the treatment field and all of us in the community are working diligently at finding better ways to do what we do, to collaborate together and work to address this issue. But we have our work cut out, and it's a great question, and I wish you well.
Just referencing the woman, the grandmother who spoke at our hearing yesterday, she said it was a tough, long struggle over a year and a half where she really had no legal status regarding her grandchildren and the custody of them. And so that affected her trying to get different services that could support them. She was able to get health insurance for them, but other types of services, child care, transportation issues, challenges, getting them on the school bus, et cetera, those are real issues. She did find a network of support groups, and she has now obtained legal custody of her grandchildren. And so that has, in fact, opened up the door for her to really have some legal rights regarding, you know, their upbringing. The other might be a contact with your county Children and Youth Services Agency, and they might be able to help you and others in a similar situation know what your rights are and what you might need to do.
Anybody else have a comment on that? Thank you. I'd also like to remind people, press star 3 to ask a question. We have Al on the line from Northampton County. Al, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, I really appreciate the forum. As I've been listening, I can tell you guys are pretty serious about this. And over the course of the years, I really questioned, you know, government in general, especially Pennsylvania government, as far as its seriousness in handling this issue. Certainly turning it from a criminal issue to a medical issue is a major step in the right direction. I lost somebody about 2 years ago from heroin. She was 33 years old. She lived with me for about 3 years. That was October 20th, actually, 2 years ago she passed away. During the course of my relationship with this young woman, I watched her in and out of rehabs on a regular basis, and it was fairly obvious that they weren't working very well. I guess my question is this. Education and finding the truth about how this substance works, how drugs in general work, but opiates in particular, is critical. How open are you folks? And Mary, I know you personally, by the way. You may not recognize my voice. You were mayor of Mount Pocono, for example, and married some friends of mine years ago. I wouldn't mind stopping and talking to you about this issue, but I know you're serious, but education is critical. The knowledge that's out there, historically speaking, about these issues is critical. What's being the approach that's being taken now, I'm telling you factually, is not working. The rehab centers are basically not functioning in a very good manner. I guess the question is, are you seriously trying to address this from really a different way, from criminal to medical, and understanding the relationship thereof, and how critical it is to really approach this from a fresh idea?
Yeah, thank you for your question. I can answer that. I think we are looking at it in a different way, and the Center for Rural Pennsylvania and the hearings that we've had, our goal is to gather information. We don't, we report what people tell us, and we've tried to do that because we're a bipartisan, bicameral organization. And the one thing that we have been hearing repeatedly is that the cookie-cutter 30-day, 28-day programs or whatever they are, not very effective. And that treatment needs to be individualized because everybody is a little bit different. And I know I've heard stories of people being away for these 30-day programs for 4 or 5 times. And I use this example all the time. If somebody has diabetes, you just can't send them away for 30 days and they come back fixed. It's a lifelong problem. And a lot of times it takes a lot more care than just a short period of stay. Barry, if you want to comment, please, or Andy.
One of the things, we are changing how we do treatment. There's a lot of change happening in the field, especially with the knowledge that we have regarding the impact of especially the high-grade, high-potency heroin and opioid prescription drugs. They change how the brain works. So we're working to change how we introduce different therapies, understanding the effect of trauma on the brain. Engaging the client in longer-term treatment, whether they do 30 days, they come out and they are engaged in the process. Using medication-assisted treatment, whether you agree with methadone or not, it is one tool in a basket. There's Suboxone, whether you agree with that or not, it's another tool that we can use. There's drugs such as Vivitrol, which is naltrexone in a suspension system that is what we call an MU opioid site blocker. It blocks the effects of the drug. So we're using them. We're seeing some successes. We're seeing some challenges that we are faced with within the treatment. There are a great deal of dedicated people in this field working at very mediocre or moderate salaries to help people save their lives. We need to look at that, and we need to educate them and bring them, continue to bring them up into the system. So the tide is turning. It's going to take a bit of time, but the tide is turning.
Yeah, if I may, I'll just add quickly to that. We've heard quite a bit about this whole concept and practice of a continuum of care. And so while it may, in fact, require inpatient treatment for folks, or for some medication-assisted treatment may be the right option, but the follow-up and support services, the peer counseling from certified recovery specialists, that network of continued counseling and networking to support that person once they may come out of a formal inpatient treatment program, there's a lot of movement towards that whole continuum of care, and I think that is a new, fresher paradigm of treatment services.
Al, this is Shane Scanlon. I think another thing that we have to look at is the way that this is being looked at is different. You know, not too many years ago, there weren't too many prosecutors' offices that were pushing treatment court as an alternative to incarcerating defendants. We in our county have probably one of the most successful treatment court programs, or at least a program that is the most successful thing that we've seen working for the people in our population. Our drug court, our treatment court, sees a number of individuals that come through that we don't see again. You know, they're taught how to live their lives without drugs, and they become productive members of society again. So when you see your district attorney's office promoting treatment courts or websites such as the one that was launched by my office, heroinhitshome.com, you realize that the philosophy is changing really from avenues that maybe you didn't think you'd ever see those changes.
Thank you. I'd like to remind everybody again that if you want to ask the question, press *3 on your phone. And I would also once again like to recognize our sponsors this evening for this telephone town hall, who are Senator Dave Argall, Senator Lisa Baker, Senator John Gordner, and Senator Mario Scavello. We have Sonia on the line from Snyder County. Sonia, what's your question?
Yes, I was wondering if there is any type of a program that has been used to educate the physicians not to prescribe some of these drugs for patients when they aren't really necessary, that it'd be possible that well, just like recently, I had some oral surgery, and they prescribed a strong pain medication, which I don't like medication, so I only took one pill out of the 30 that was prescribed, which meant that the rest of that prescription laid in my medicine cabinet where it would have been available for someone that shouldn't have it to be able to get their hands on it. If doctors would be prescribed either maybe to do a smaller dose or try to educate us as patients to learn to do without so much pain medicine, if there's any type of program for the physicians available, if it's being approached in that way at all.
Sonia, thank you for your question. I can answer that. The answer is yes. Right now, there are a couple of bills in the legislature which would make pain management and prescription writing part of the continuing medical education for doctors and actually anyone who prescribes opioids or that type of medication. Right now, you hit the nail right on the head what part of the problem is. I know that, for example, medical doctors, I've heard this repeatedly in our hearings, that veterinarians get more training in pain management than medical doctors. So we've talked to the medical schools here in Pennsylvania as well as the medical society, and I think that right now there are some voluntary guidelines out there, and we in the legislature are probably looking at making those guidelines a part of the statutory requirements that would be part of the whole licensing procedure for anybody who is a bit, has the ability to write prescriptions. So, yes, the answer is we are looking at that right now.
Can I just make one comment on that? Let's understand that this generation of physicians have been taught that pain is one of the five vital signs and taught that they're supposed to treat that over the last 20, 25 years. They're also in a situation where in an outpatient setting, they've got 16 minutes to deal with the patient. You know, so most of the addicts that I run into, most of the people who have substance use disorder, opiate side, are very difficult patients to deal with. So they cause a lot of ruckus in that setting. In a inpatient setting, patients, the doctors are rated on how well they treat the patient. If a patient is a pain medication patient, happens to be addicted, they're going to be upset if they don't get their pain medication. So I want to say that in fairness to the vast majority of physicians out there, they recognize what the issues are, and there is movement going forward for education. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have a question online from Celeste. How can we get a hub or a website going that will have updated availability of beds for rehab and detox centers?
That's a very good question.
Andy,
I can't state this in fact, but I do believe that DDAP is looking at that and how they can incorporate that. There's also several counties that are working with designing their website and the providers that they have contracts with to update them on a daily basis regarding the availability of detox beds. The issue that we have, and Senator Yaw said it earlier, is we are in an epidemic with a shortage of detox beds that will be for quite a while. So it is a tough question, and hopefully we'll continue to move forward in that.
All right, we also have Julia on the line from Wayne County. Julia, what's your question?
Hello. I know of some countries that use Narcone, and they make it readily available to anybody who wants it. Is there some way we can do the same?
Thank you for your question. Barrett?
I would say that is available in Pennsylvania, that the Physician General, Dr. Rachel Levine, issued a standing order, not just for police and EMS, but also for family members and others. If they live with or believe that there's somebody that they know that has an addiction, they can use that standing order to go to a pharmacy and get Narcan. Now, they do want you to get trained in it. There's a number of online training programs. The Pennsylvania Department of Drug and Alcohol on their website has a very short 15 to 20 minute online training program that will assist you in understanding how you administer the various versions of naloxone, that various ways that naloxone can be administered. One of the challenges is the pharmacies that stock it. I think there's a growing number of those that readily have it available and in stock. In some rural parts of the Commonwealth, there's some challenges, but within a day or two, we've been hearing that they will stock that and get it for you. Some of the naloxone types are really not all that expensive, and insurance companies do cover the cost of that. So I would say Pennsylvania has done a really good job in making naloxone available for individuals to access and to get.
Thank you. We also have Peter on the line from Snyder County.
Hi, yes. When you started off, you were talking about how you would run out of jails if you put all the addicts in prison. And someone had mentioned earlier about inpatient beds. What is being done in terms of trying to increase the supply, not only of inpatient units, but also of to get enough addiction specialists, both physician and non-physician, available? Also, and to address the question someone had about training for physicians, I'm an oncologist, and I'm also licensed in Maryland. There is already a requirement for continuing medical education and safe opioid prescribing, which I understand is going to become a requirement in Pennsylvania next year. But, you know, the talk earlier was about funding. So, you know, that kind of plays into it. You know, is there going to be enough funding from the state to train and attract people to treat all of these addicts, both when they're inpatient and after they get out?
Thank you for your question. I guess the short answer as a legislator is that we're aware that it's probably going to take more funds, or at least we're going to have to reorganize the way we spend the funds. As I said earlier, I think that there's pretty much agreement, or at least we're finding consensus from what we've heard, that the 30-day programs they're not that effective for the money that's spent. So maybe we can do something and save some money there. but we need to take a look at it. There's no question about it. We need to look at different types of people. For example, certified recovery specialists are now probably very effective. We need to look at medication-assisted treatment. So all these things require money, but they're also, if we do it the right way, I think that we can actually save money. For example, if we can keep people out of prison, I know what it costs at the state level is around $36,000 a year to keep a person in prison. Well, 70% of the people in prison have a treatable addiction. So if we can keep them out, we can actually save money. Now, I don't know what the county costs are. I forget those, but it's the district attorney Scanlon, I'm sure, knows, and he can address this. But I think that we're going to have to spend more money, but I think that we are probably faced with taking a look at a lot of programs and using the money that we already spend more effectively.
I can speak to the county jail costs in Lackawanna County. It costs us $62 a day per inmate to incarcerate. We have found that, you know, programs such as pretrial services that get our people into services faster, you know, drug and alcohol treatment, mental health treatment, or programs such as our drug court, our veterans court, our DUI court, our money is much better spent treating the underlying problems for our people that face addiction than it is to house them in our county jail. With that being said, there still will be people that have to be held accountable and drug dealers that will be sent to state prison.
Peter, there's a significant shortage of addiction-trained docs, and they're in great demand. Many of them that are working for substance use disorder treatment programs in the state work for three or four. That's due to the shortage. Substance use or addiction treatment has never been one of the more popular areas to go into. The federal government has taken the limits for medication-assisted Suboxone treatment for those docs who have 1 year of practice up to 275 patients. So that will help. But you're right on regarding the fact that there is a significant shortage of physicians that will treat addiction or work in an addiction treatment program.
And we heard in one of our hearings up in Bradford, Pennsylvania, the shortage in workforce of counselors, the burnout, the lower salaries, making it not that attractive of a field to go into, the work hours, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that is a real workforce issue. There is a proposed piece of legislation. It may not move by the end of this session, but the issue of expanding Pennsylvania's loan forgiveness programs to look at addiction counselors, as we have similar programs for docs and nurses, that might be an avenue to incentivize that career option for people who want to go and pursue those careers.
We have Susie on the line who from Northumberland County, who has a question.
Hi. You answered one of my questions a little bit, but one is, where is the Narcan available for the public to know? And also, if somebody would bring somebody in that's having problems, that they're crashing, will they get in trouble?
Thank you for your question. And we've had a lot of questions come in about Narcan and naloxone, so that's why we'll maybe try and address this again. There's a Good Samaritan law that basically if you administer Narcan and you've been trained, you're totally immune from any suit or anything like that. My understanding is naloxone or Narcan can be used. It is, if you mistakenly use it, there's no harm to the person, but I'll let others address how it is available also.
Barriers. Susie, this is Shane Scanlon. Susie, if you call your local pharmacies, you can find out which ones stock and carry naloxone. It is available without a prescription. So that's an easy answer. As far as what you do if you're with someone that's overdosing or even using with someone that's overdosing, we have a wonderful law, the Pennsylvania Good Samaritan law, that exempts you from criminal prosecution if you are the person that dials 911 or takes the person that's overdosing to get them the assistance that they need. We had learned in the past that people were afraid to dial 911 to get a friend or family member help because there would be drugs or drug paraphernalia laying around the house. There is no fear of prosecution based upon the Good Samaritan law, and you can very easily find that if you Google Pennsylvania's Good Samaritan law.
Thank you, and we hope that that answers some of the questions that have been out there. We have a question from Genevieve from Wyoming County. Genevieve, what's your question?
Hi. You spoke earlier about our prisons being overpopulated, and that's the general rule within our three-county area. And once the prisoners do get in there because of drugs, they meet up with other prisoners who can tell them where else they can purchase the drugs that they're interested in. And also, is there any treatment available for them in the prison system at all? From what I understand, I know of none. But one other thing, if you read in the paper the judge's notes for what he has processed during the week, the majority of those that he has done relate to DUIs or drugs in particular. Now, there's so many out there with third and fourth offenses of DUIs, and these people have either injured people or killed people. Why can't we do something more to keep these people off the roads? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your question. I'll throw that to the district attorney.
Genevieve, I think as far as what treatment is available in your local jails is going to vary from county to county. I know as the district attorney, I'm on the prison board, and that's a very high priority for us, is getting more services for our inmates in our county jail. So it's a very high priority in Lackawanna County. The DUI laws dictate that, you know, following a conviction, your license is suspended, ignition interlock is mandated on your cars. You know, you can't bar someone from ever getting into any car or, you know, violating the law and driving someone else's car or driving a car without a license. We do our best to enforce the laws. When we find those violators, we try our best to hold them accountable. It's a sad reality. There are people that violate the law. But I can tell you, you were saying the number of people that you see in the judge's notes. I would be very comfortable to say that 75 to 80% of the people incarcerated in Lackawanna County have either drug and alcohol addiction issues or mental health issues. So that is our prison population.
Thank you for your question. We have Kate on the line from Wayne County. Kate, what's your question?
Hi, I'm actually calling more just to talk about the problem if I can. I'm a registered nurse, and I also am a coordinator for a registered opioid overdose prevention program in New York State. So I kind of wanted to reiterate, I think, as I'm listening to this discussion, about the importance of recognizing that addiction is a disease, and that I hear a lot of people when I do training with Narcan, because I do a lot of the Narcan training for our first responders, and I hear a lot of people say, but there's repeats. You know, I see multiple people addicting, you know, overdosing multiple times and that type of thing. And my response to that is I also, as a registered nurse, I used to do diabetes education training. I've done a lot of different types of training, not only with health professionals, but also with patients. And I have had diabetic patients that I have also educated multiple times. I heard someone mention diabetes before. And you go in and you teach them about their diet, and then they go home and they eat a piece of cake. This is a much, much stronger addiction than food or cigarettes or any other types of things like that. So it's very, very difficult for people to break this addiction. The Narcan, you know, many people are looking at the Narcan and saying, well, that's the solution to the problem. The Narcan is actually the Band-Aid, and the Narcan is actually what's keeping people alive while we resolve the problem so that we can get better treatment facilities, so that we can educate young children and hopefully prevent them from falling into the drug addiction problem. But our society really has developed a culture where, over time, we've come to think of pills as the cure-all. When we get an infection, we go to the doctor, we expect them to give us a pill to cure that infection or to cure whatever's wrong with us. It's being advertised on television. You know, if you're having this problem, call your doctor and ask them to prescribe this medication. So the nature of the problem goes beyond just treating the problem. We have to address the culture of the situation in order to decrease drug addiction and in order to be able to help people who are addicts. The other aspect of the drug treatment is once we get people through drug treatment and we get them off of drugs, and I'm sure those of you who work in the addiction can attest to this much more than I can in the treatment side of it, is that when you get people who are addicted and you get them through the treatment, we then turn around and we send them back home, and their next-door neighbor might be their dealer. So we're putting them back into the same environment that they came out of where their addiction problem is. It's like taking, again, it's like taking a diabetic, putting a piece of birthday cake in front of them with a bunch of people around them eating birthday cake and saying, don't do that. So it's a culture thing that has to be addressed as well.
Yes. Kate, that you're right on. I agree about the culture and what we refer to it or what has been referred to for us as a warm handoff. We need and you heard Barry Denk speak earlier about the continuum of care. I think it's become readily apparent to us in all of our hearings and stuff that this is a community-wide effort, and it's never going to stop. That's why I use the example about diabetes. It's a lifelong problem, and this addiction is a lifelong problem. And the whole community, and when I say the whole community, I mean everybody has to be on board, from the law enforcement to judges to social workers to the churches, you name it. And that's the only way that we're ever going to address it.
Yeah, just one comment on that. If you made cigarettes, all tobacco products illegal, people would continue to use them. And what we have to do is understand that there's not somebody with an addiction issue, a substance use disorder issue, in all my career that ever wanted to be one. So teaching people, demystifying addiction, and Kate, you made some great statements, demystifying this issue and recognizing it as truly a medical issue is where we're headed, and that's the silver lining behind the cloud.
We have Ray on the line from Pike County. Ray, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is, we've dealt with it with my son regarding addictions. Now, our biggest problem we've run into with him, and I'm sure a gentleman mentioned it when I first got on earlier, these programs, if someone is put into the program voluntarily or even state mandated through the courts or whatever, they, when they're in the programs, they are able to sign themselves out at any time. This is the biggest problem my son has had when he was in the rehabs and so on, because he knew that he had the power to sign himself out of the rehab at any time, when, of course, the addiction is going to tell you, get yourself out as quickly as possible. So I'm wondering, is there any way to address that through legislation or through medical initiatives to get the people to stay in a program longer than they want to be there?
All right, Ray, thank you for your question. Actually, this is something that the panel kind of talked about a little bit before we started, so I'll ask District Attorney Scanlon to comment on that because I think he has some feelings about it.
Ray, I agree with you wholeheartedly. What we see is people who are court-ordered or mandated into treatment have a higher success rate because they're forced to be there, they're forced to complete the program, and they're monitored after. We also have laws in our Commonwealth that allow a parent to put a minor child into an inpatient treatment center, and the child is forced to stay there, but we don't have any such laws for adults. We need almost an involuntary commitment, similar to the way we do for mental health. We need that for drug addiction. And hopefully it's something that our legislature will tackle. It is truly a necessary a thing that's seen by all of the people in that deal with this.
And it may take something that we need to do some legislative changes. And so, once again, we're taking a look at everything that's out there. We have Luann on the phone from Northampton County. Luann, what's your question?
All right. Well, a lot of parts of my question I think were answered, but I first of all, I just want to make a comment about teaching and the training. And my daughter, when she was in elementary school, between the school and our local police department, they went through that DARE program, and I think that was a very good program in elementary school. Now, secondly, what I wanted to ask was kind of like the treatment programs in the prisons, you know, which I know they were talking about. My daughter-in-law, well, she was in prison for stealing to support her heroin addiction, and she was in prison, and she went through the rehab there, but, you know, like someone said, too, 30 days really isn't enough. She got out of jail, and 3 days later, she overdosed. So I really think, you know, we need better programs in prison and when you get out, too, because my brother's wife also had a heroin addiction, and she was in treatment several times in Pennsylvania, and, you know, it's you go for 30 days, and then you're out, and you're right back where you started. When they moved to Florida, I don't know what kind of program they had, but my brother just thought it was the best because they kept her a lot longer, and they actually got her through her addiction, and she hasn't had any heroin since. And
wow.
I think that's wonderful. So I think we need to follow some other states and, you know, and do better with the rehab.
Thank you for your question, and I agree with you. I think that we have found out in all the hearings that we've had and everything that we need to take a look at these cookie-cutter treatment programs and individualized treatments, which may result in longer treatment.
Just again on the education, the evidence base, the DARE program was very popular, but the research is iffy, quite honestly, about the real impact of the DARE program, although it was popular. One thing that's important to understand with our younger individuals in terms of education programs, scare tactic efforts don't work for them. Their brains are not developed to the point to really understand the scare tactic result that we're trying to get across to them. And so different types of programs need to be designed for different audiences based on their level of intellectual development.
Just to make a comment on the Florida model program, and that's what it's called, the Florida model, and they do keep them a bit longer. Now, one of the things that I want to reiterate, there are a lot of really good treatment programs in the state of Pennsylvania who are doing a lot of cutting-edge work. The other side of this is there is a growing community of recovering people throughout this state. And, you know, if you want to get a message, look at Faces and Voices of Recovery online to show that you now in this country have in excess of 23 million recovering people who are giving back to their community. I want people to understand there is hope, there is effective treatment, and we got to keep going back to it. You know, you look at the person you talked about, the person who's diabetic and they keep going back to bad eating. You know, let's keep the message positive and go forward as best we can.
It looks as though, unfortunately, our time is up, and this has been a terrific discussion. I'd like to personally thank our special guest this evening, Barry Dank from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, Lackawanna County District Attorney Shane Scanlon, and Andrew Sullivan, the former president and CEO of Mazzetti and Sullivan Counseling Services. Also, once again, I want to thank our sponsors this evening, Senator Dave Argall, Senator Lisa Baker, Senator John Gordner, and Senator Mario Scavello, for everything that they have done to help me in making this issue more public so that we can better address it. Thanks to everyone who listened in today and to those who shared opinions and asked questions. If you have any remaining questions or concerns regarding the issue of heroin and opioid addiction, I encourage you to remain on the line, to leave a message, and someone will follow up with you, or visit our website at www.acommonwealthcrisis.com. This website is a great tool to assist Pennsylvanians to talk and learn about the ever-growing heroin and opioid crisis, which is taking the lives of our citizens every day. Thank you again for your participation, and have a great evening.